Welcome to Middle School Matters podcast number 622. Taylor Swift and Rick Rolling. We've got some jokes for your classroom, and we've got some other interesting things you might find useful as well. So without further ado, here's the wonderful, the magnanimous, the Mr. Troy Patterson.
All right, welcome back to the show. I am Troy Patterson, and with me is the world's greatest co-show host, Mr. Sean McGurr. Hey, Sean.
Well, hello there. Yeah, are you having a feeling of deja vu?
Having a feeling of deja vu. I am, and I'm just going to come right out here and say it right now. This is our second round of this because we're having some issues with Audio Hijack. I have a support ticket open with them. But getting everything to record correctly has been a bit of a challenge. So... but it looks like we are recording both sides right now, even though I'm not on the microphone that I want to be on. It looks like it's getting recorded. Hopefully I can get back to the better microphone soon. In the meantime, since you've already heard all the jokes, you can pretend that maybe you haven't.
Yeah, I know the jokes now. and it's not going to help you to put them in white font like you normally do.
Yeah, I know. All right. We're gonna give Sean some quizzes, and Sean is gonna pretend he doesn't know the answers. What has two syllables but hundreds of letters?
Two syllables and hundreds of letters. Well, yeah, I'm gonna use the same response I did before, which is something. It's either Czechoslovakian or Lithuanian.
There are an awful lot of letters in. I don't know about the syllables though.
That's a good question.
Postmen have two syllables, but hundreds of letters.
Sure.
What's the opposite of formaldehyde?
Well, seventh graders at lunch, because nothing gets preserved there.
Actually, it is casual Jekyll.
I see. I see what you did there.
Formaldehyde.
Yep.
Casual Jekyll. Yep. Here's just a thought for you. The word Q is ironic.
Yes.
Because it's just a Q with a bunch of silent letters waiting in line. And all of those letters are vowels, which are aforementioned languages. Frequently don't have.
Right. I think somebody went and stole them and then played a trick on them and said, you can only use these. We'll take these over here. you get to use those.
Oh, kind of bummed out. I had to tell my wife that I lost another audiobook.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that.
Yeah. I'll never hear the end of it.
I bet you will. That's true. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. And she likes books.
Yep. You know that we just had Earth Day.
Okay.
Yeah. Did you celebrate Earth Day?
No, I am not an Earth worshiper.
Okay. I personally can't wait till we get to Wind and Fire Day.
Oh yeah, I hit concert.
We are going to really celebrate that one.
There you go. There it is.
Another thought for you. The shorter you are, the deeper the swimming.
Yeah. That's very true. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You are a fan of superheroes, correct?
Yes.
Yes. Who is the lamest superhero?
Well, I'm going to, since we're on version two of this, I'm going to interject a little story in here in the middle of your joke.
Okay.
Because I've now had a chance to think about this answer, and I think I've got a better answer.
Okay.
And that is, I've got a seventh grader this year who's very short.
So he's in a very deep, so the swimming pool is very deep.
Yeah. For him, the swimming pool might as well be the ocean, the Marianas Trench. but he's good natured about it.
Yeah.
And so I told him, I said, you know, you need a superhero pose for being short. And then I played the old theme song from the 1950s, for Mighty Mouse.
You know, here he comes to save the day.
That's him. And so he went to computer class and did his pose and had the computer teacher down there play the song. And so that's his walk up music. That's his that's his pose.
Love that.
That's what he does now.
Love
so
that.
There, he's not lame. He's my little superhero.
There you go. He is certainly more of a superhero than Piano Man. Let's continue on with your quiz.
Okay.
Why do French chefs only use one egg?
Why do French chefs use only one egg? I'm going to guess it has something to do with the school at Cordon Bleu.
Close. Because one egg is enough.
Indeed.
Did you know my dog talks in her sleep?
Hazel does?
Yeah. She never tells the truth, yeah. though.
Really?
Yeah, there's nothing I can do about it.
Oh?
Yeah. You have to let sleeping dogs lie.
I see. Mm-hmm. I got you now.
You are very, very good with the English language. So, you know, pre means before.
I've heard that, yes. Post, I've heard that before.
Post means after.
Yeah. Yeah.
And do you use both prefixes together?
Uh-huh.
That would be preposterous.
Oh, sure it would.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed.
Yeah. Let's see here. We're just going to leave a few extra jokes for you over at Middle School Matters, including one that is going to reference a certain very popular album that just came out this past week or a couple weeks ago. I don't remember. I lost recently. And I think Sean is going to end up taking advantage of this concept, if not this graphic, very soon with some of his kids. Maybe in Moodle, maybe
definitely Moodle, yeah.
A little quiz, because you could add some additional material in there, let's say. So, I would definitely do that. The other thing that I would do is I would listen very closely to the Middle School Science Minute. This one is awesome. This is on performance-based assessment. That's actually going to come up in just a minute as well, because I think that, and as Dave points out, rather than being something stressful, assessment should feel like a celebration of learning for students. And I think that was part of what reason you weren't here last week, right?
It's true. Yeah. It's true.
So we'll have a little bit of that from Sean, but first we're going to have the wonderful Mr. Dave Bidlowski in the Middle School Science Minute.
Hi, this is Dave Bidlowski of K12Science.net, and this is your K-12 Science Podcast. I was recently reading the March-April 2024 issue of ScienceScope, a magazine for middle school science teachers published by the National Science Teaching Association. And I read an article entitled Designing Performance-Based Assessments That Engage, and it was written by Katie Coppins. And she said, just like there are countless ways for students to learn new information, there are countless ways for students to show what they've learned. Performance-based assessments allow students to demonstrate their understanding of one or more standards by accomplishing tasks that are engaging and flexible in how students approach them. There are typically five essential components of performance-based assessments: complex, authentic, process product-oriented, open-ended, and time-bound. She said that even though she offers retakes on tests and always emphasizes growth and learning rather than grades, many students associate traditional tests with stress. to help, she focuses on reviewing strategies and ways to feel confident going into an assessment. Reflection has also shown her that performance-based assessments feel like a celebration of learning, where students demonstrate more excitement and less stress because of the open-ended nature of the tasks. She then shared an example of a performance-based assessment. She used the water crisis in Flint, Michigan, to teach students about systems thinking from a lens of examining interconnections between society, environment, and the economy. After an introduction about the events concerning Flint's water crisis, students choose between a range of topics to research. Topics include lead poisoning, environmental injustice, plastic bottle use, real estate prices, Legionnaire's disease, and legal consequences for those involved in the Flint water crisis. After 3 days of researching, students take part in a Socratic discussion about the topic of the Flint water crisis with a group goal of including every topic from the list provided. As they take part in the discussion, she tracks the flow of the conversation and creates a visual using the spiderweb method. A summative group grade is given to the class based on the depth of the topics covered and the balance of student voices. This jigsaw approach creates a collaborative learning environment where students learn from and with one another. Afterward, students independently make a systems thinking model to show their understanding of the Flint water crisis and how it connects to society, environment, and the economy. Typically, performance-based assessments require strategies to support students with time management. It's important to break the tasks into steps with clear deadlines as students work toward the final product. Even with that support at any given moment, students will be in different places in their process. To help manage this for assignments, she uses a status of the class chart at the start of each class, which allows her to visualize and see where students are in their progression. Students show pride in letting her know that they've moved on to the next step, and this also serves as a quick visual for her to see who needs support. Another challenge of performance-based assessments is that some students end their work before others. She provides a choice board containing extension activities that students can work on independently as she assists other students. She went on to say that students engage in critical thinking with this form of assessment, which often involves synthesizing information and the application of scientific skills to a real-life scenario. The Flint water crisis discussion involved research, systems thinking, speaking skills, and listening skills. Performance-based assessment tasks are authentic extensions of the unit's work with built-in opportunities for student choice and differentiation. In addition to seeing students' scientific knowledge, teachers get a better sense of the interests and strengths that each student brings to each open-ended assignment. Students' engagement level is also high, and students have expressed that they feel less stressed with this approach than with traditional tests. It also feels positive to create a class environment that ends a unit with a celebration of learning, where students apply their understanding of the unit's concepts by following their own natural curiosity. And this has been your K-12 Science Podcast.
All right. That is just awesome. Using performance-based assessments. And I think the more you can do of that, the more powerful. I think it's powerful for kids. And you were not here last week because you were off to Central Michigan.
Yeah, we were off to Central Michigan University. I do have to tell you that I do like having the software mess up, because foreshadowing becomes so much easier when we do the show. I was off at Central Michigan University, the state of Michigan's Historical Society of Michigan. Held their annual Michigan History Day statewide competition. And we had two groups go, one individual, one small group, go to the exhibit portion of the competition. And they showed up. and they did their presentations, and it was really well done. Matter of fact, if I get a chance, I'll stick some pictures in there of some of the exhibits. We didn't get a chance to see everything. There were performances, there were websites, there were original speeches, there were readings. There's five different categories. I don't remember them all. And it took up Powers Hall and Grand Hall. We were in Grand Hall all day. And it was really well done. And the kids learned a lot by being able to see other students' work that was good work. We were talking amongst ourselves, the other seventh grade social studies teacher and I were talking, and we were commenting on how our kids never get a chance to see excellent other student work because they never get out of their little circle and they only think of what is best within that circle. But if what's best within that circle is a very low level performance and they only ever think that, well, that's the best, they're doing themselves a disservice. And our kids got a chance to see what the best was in the state. And they were going around making notes like, oh, I never thought of that. Oh, this is a good idea. I want to use this somewhere else. And they were taking notes, mental notes, you know, that, oh, here's some good ideas for some things. So it turned out very, very well. And we've been doing a number of different student performance-based things in our social studies enrichment with Michigan Youth and Government, Michigan History Day, Michigan Social Studies Olympiad. I had them do some things with the assistant principal, some in-house simulations. And it's turned out very, very nice. I've noticed that there are a number of kids who are now starting to up their work, they're upping their work because they're seeing the other kids' work and how it's getting rewarded with positive reinforcement grades, that sort of thing. And now they're like, well, I need to step up my game so that I can start winning awards or start going for awards. And then there are those who have looked at it and said, yeah, they're just so much better than I am. I'll never be able to succeed. And we're able to step in and go, that's not true. And we're able to correct some of that mentality, because I think one of the things that we've seen take over the entire grade is I only need to do the minimum in order to move on. And I think we want to change that mentality. And one of the ways that we can change that is by showing off really good work and success and saying, you too can be successful too. You just got to start plugging away at it. And we'll see how it goes. I mean, there are always going to be that one or dozen that are going to say, yeah, you go ahead and do that, because, you know, I'm just not interested in that thing. So maybe we get the other disciplines involved and we start doing some things to get kids to start self-starting themselves to giving their best and not their just enough.
That's pretty awesome. And I think that that's powerful as well, seeing what's going on with other kids and that. So the five categories looks like papers, websites, documentaries, exhibits, and performances. Does that sound that sounds great?
Yeah, and some of the performances we went through, they were down on first floor, and they're my cousins were dance kids. Your kids were dance kids. And you remember the dads walking into competitions carrying all the props and all of the backgrounds and all of the other things. Yeah. And that's exactly what it looked like, with the parents bringing in materials for the kids to use in their performances. Now, I didn't get a chance to go in there and see them because those things are closed off and parents and adults are not allowed inside to see them. And they don't get shown anywhere. Like on the stage at the end of the competition. So we never get a chance to see those. But I did get a chance to see the exhibits and went through those, and they were really well done. I have some pictures. I will show them. I have pictures without students, so it'll be good.
Yeah. And did the kids, once again, because I know that they did the first time, how did the kids react? Did they talk about the process and how they were feeling and their reactions? You mentioned a little bit about them saying that, oh, you know, we can't do that, or, oh, they're doing that, was there anything else that they mentioned reflectively about the process?
Yeah, they were all excited about meeting the judges and talking with the judges and being able to talk about their presentations. You could feel the excitement and the investment that they had in those presentations because it was theirs, which is far more than you would see them doing investing in things like, you know, Y equals MX plus B. That's, yes, I'm going to go after the math people. You can find, I'm sure, there is a use for Y equals MX plus B. Let's make a competition out of it. They did. They came out, the parents were there with them. And so while they were in with the judges individually, you know, I get a chance to sit outside and talk with the parents and make, you know, family connections. And then when they came out, you know, and then they were just gushing with, you know, they talked about this, they did this, they talked about this. And they were, you could tell they were really listening to the feedback and what they could do to make things better. I thought that was an important piece because all of a sudden they valued the feedback. It wasn't coming from me. It was coming from a different adult. And that made all the difference in the world. I found that interesting as well. So their individual investment into it and the excitement level that they got out of it is definitely going to be motivating. I got seventh graders. This is why I take my eighth graders. I don't have seventh grader social studies enrichment this year. I have seventh graders who are already itching to go. One of the things they have to do is they have to write a process paper. What did you experience going through this process? And that process paper has to be printed off with an annotated bibliography separated by primary and secondary sources. And three copies have to be present at their presentation, one for each judge and one for themselves. Okay. And so we had to make sure we got that right. And then they had to format it right. And so they had to learn about formatting. So rather than just doing it because the teacher said so, now they're doing it because that's the requirement for the competition and that's what the judges want to see and this is what's going to get talked about, which gave MLA formatting a purpose, which I thought was great.
Yeah.
And then I had to teach them MLA formatting, which had a purpose. Mm-hmm. So that was good. And the process paper, I think, was important for them to process through what they had learned and the experience of learning. And it was good.
And I'd love to see that process paper happen, because that's where the learning really kicks in, right? It's like
right.
Thinking about, like, how did I get here? So including that process paper, I think, is awesome. And I think we should do that more frequently in education, whether that's a journal, whether, you know, kids are journaling, like, how did you learn this week? What did you learn this week? Or anything with their self-reflecting on how they learned and what they learned. So that's awesome. And then this week we both had some testing going on. The testing window for Maine is open, so we've been doing some testing. And that went fairly well. And I have to say that one of the things that happens is kids try to log in, and occasionally they'll try to log in, and it just doesn't work for whatever reason, right? And so I frequently get a call that's like, you know, student can't log in. I got an email that said, student can't log in. I said something back along the lines of, does the student have a name? I worded it much nicer than that, but, you know, and I recognize, you know, people freak out because the stress level in that. But so then I walked down, I checked to make sure the kid's got an account, hasn't been disabled, you know, any of that good stuff. So then I head down, and the kid was testing in a small group. And the kid's sitting there, and I walk in, and the kid's got his computer in front of him. And he's got a pile of candy next to him. And so I walk in, and I sit down next to him, and I'm just like, okay. So I point to the I said, all right, let's do this. Let's see what's going on. And so he puts in the username, the password, the class code, and it works, right? It goes right through. And he looks at me and he goes, thank you. And I said, you know, you're welcome. That's right. And I'm walking out and I'm thinking to myself, here's an eighth grade kid who was just sitting there, didn't have to do anything, had a pile of candy. I just made it so he had to take a test. And he thanked me. I don't know about you, but when I was an eighth grader, I'd have been happy to sit there doing nothing with a pile of candy. But
yep.
Okay. But he was very polite and thanked me, and we got everything going. So I just thought that was funny. It's like, here's a kid, pile of candy, world's his oyster. So so we had that. We also had a meeting. We've invited a bunch of kids to go to the MILTI conference, which is the Maine Learning Technology Initiative, and they have a student conference. So we're planning on taking a bunch of students up to Orono for the MILTI student conference. They get to go to a bunch of sessions and all that good stuff. So we had the kickoff meeting for that. So we'll be doing that in toward the end of May. So any experiences with testing for you?
Testing for us. We had the second part of the M-Step, and it went fairly well. We were told we could no longer let the kids put their heads down afterwards because they found that the kids are simply hitting B, 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 B. And the answer is speeding through the test in this so they can put their head down. So we've discovered that issue. What else was there? It went pretty smoothly, which is unusual for the M-Step.
Yeah, and all of these tests are now online, right?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
I was amazed, especially with the PSAT. You're going through all kinds of these levels of security, part of which you have to stop and shake your head and go, if a kid works this hard to cheat on this test, they should be getting bonus points.
Let's not dock them for that.
Let's find a reward, a way to reward this creativity.
I think that the social web was pretty quiet for you this week.
Yeah, there's not. Well, it's mostly me, not the social web. I had other events in life that were eating my time. Teacher portfolios. Teacher portfolios eat a huge chunk of time. So you're doing that instead of following other folks online. And then there's other life events too. So I got two things for you. One is Deirdre J. Owen, an author. At Deirdre J. Owen. I'm filling out a medical form online and I'm curious as to who's out there speaking old English. And I put a screen, or she included a screenshot. So I threw that in there as well. And it is, you, when you're selecting English or your language, you can select that you speak old English.
they also have middle 450 English.
450 to 1100.
To be fair, they have middle English as well.
I mean, and if you speak it, then, you know, apparently it's a race or a language. I'm sorry. So did they find a translator for that?
So they obviously pulled this from somewhere.
Yeah, I think they're using a bank somewhere. Yeah. And it's not originally intended for what they're using it for.
Right.
Because I've seen old English and I've seen middle English, and neither one of which are recognizable as English. And early modern English is tough enough for me. So, yep. So, but I thought that's hilarious. Susie Dent. We love Susie Dent. At Susie_Dent. And so I've got a couple things for you. First of all, etymology of the day. And I did not know this until she posted it. The name of the Canary Islands. And I thought, canaries, you know, like canary in a coal mine, you know. The name of the Canary Islands didn't begin with the canary bird. Instead, it's thought that the Latin Canaria Insula described the island of dogs, because one of the islands had a large population of wild dogs, which would mean that the archipelago's native bird is named after the dogs, too. It's a dog bird.
I knew this. I knew that Canary Islands was not named after the canary bird. I knew that.
Well, why are you holding out on me?
I knew something.
She also posted this week, I love how the word atone wears its heart on its sleeve. And I thought this was good. This is something I could share with the kids. It begins as at one, because to atone is to bring back unity. Atonement is really at one meant, in the same way that alone began as all one.
Oh, that one I didn't know.
I found something you didn't know.
There's plenty of stuff I don't know.
Well, I'm batting 50% today, so I'm going to take that. That's good for baseball.
That's for baseball. That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll keep finding stuff out there, but make sure you're digging out there on the social web, finding things for you to bring to your classroom. It's a good strategy.
It is a good strategy. And another good strategy is student-made ebooks. And again, I think this is awesome because this is kids processing. And you can do this throughout the year, or you can do this at the end of the year. Jennifer Gonzalez has a post on student-made ebooks, but really this is pretty cool. And I think people can do this. Kids can put this together in a whole variety of ways, and you can have kids do this in a variety of ways. You can have them use a page layout program like Word or Pages or Google Docs or whatever. If you have access to other or like Keynote or Google Presentations can be used as well. If you have access to other things like Book Creator or Canva. Canva is free for schools, by the way. If your tech director signs up, and they are privacy, they do acknowledge and follow privacy standards. So the kids can put together a book, which then becomes something that is reflective of what they've learned over the year. And I think that can be really powerful. So even if you didn't do it throughout the year, but you do it like now, you can have kids start on it and they can put together some things, and it becomes meaningful for them as well. And there's just a wide latitude of things that you can do with this. You can provide them with templates, or you can just provide them with whatever standards you want them to do. Like if you want them to have a reflective piece, you want them to have the project, you could say how many things they have. It's just wide open as to what you want to do. But what it really does is it makes kids reflect on what they learned, and that, you know, that they did do stuff during the year. So have you had kids make books at the end of the year there, Sean? I think Sean is muted himself, or
I must have hit a keystroke accidentally.
All right. Sean is back. It wasn't me this time.
No. No, it was me this time. I hit a keystroke or something funny. Okay. And all of a sudden I was muted. We do a Genius Week at the end of the year where they can delve deeply into one thing that they want to explore deeper that they learned this year. But I like this idea of, there's two ideas I think I want to add. Now I've got this one, which is the the book. And we've used Pixton to kind of like build the, like there's a graphic novel type of thing for other things, not as big and broad as this. And the other thing I want to try in Genius Week is I found a book. Matter of fact, I thought I brought it in here with me. I might be sitting on it. I'm sitting on it. I brought it. So I found a book. It's called The Medieval Cookbook.
Okay, I know that we don't record the visuals on this, but I swear to God, to the audience, that Sean was actually sitting on the book.
Yeah, yep, I was sitting on the book. I found the medieval cookbook online. It's at a museum. It's a museum piece, and production. It's so cool, and it's got some cool stuff in it. I showed it to my kids because they can do it. They can do a medieval recipe for extra credit on this last project. And I was amazed how many of the kids looked at me and were like, yep, I'm going to do that. And I was like, really? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, let's do it. So I'm thinking, you know, one of the things they could do for Genius Week is a medieval cooking show.
Oh, that would be awesome.
And make a series of recipes out of the medieval cookbook. You can get it as a PDF. I have it as a hard, or it's a soft cover book. I also bought the PDF. And then it's got an index. It's got such cool things and ideas in here. So I'm kind of curious. So I want to do two things now, because you just gave me an idea about the cumulative book thing. That might be a little difficult for some of our kids, mm-hmm. but you know what? That's the power of choice, right? Mm-hmm. And that is, the kid that feels it's too hard, they can choose something that's more in their bailiwick. And I know the girls were interested in the cookbook thing, and I might have them just eat this book up. I'm a little afraid because it's paperback, but I'm going to try that this year. I'm going to say they could do a medieval cooking show and make like 3 or 4 recipes on the show.
Yeah, that's awesome. The thing that I like about one of the things I really like about the student made books is you have so much flexibility. I mean, if you know your kids, and you can start out with just identify 3 things that you learned this year. And, you know, here's the template, what I learned, how I learned it, you know, include pictures to on up. And you can, once you know your kids and how creative they are and where their skills are, you just have a ton of wiggle room here. But it's kids thinking about their learning and what they learned. And that can be really, really powerful. So, all right. I was recording this week. I did a tech in 2 minutes.
Okay.
So I did a video in 2 minutes on, this was on using Canva to create certificates. In Canva, you can create certificates like really easy, like it's a mail merge kind of thing, you know, like, you know how to do mail merges, right? You've done it.
I did them 30 years ago in WordPerfect.
Okay, well.
WordPerfect.
That's right. So mail merges still work. It's basically a mail merge, but it's super easy. And since it is Canva, you can make them very pretty, right? So you can merge names, you can merge what it does certificates for and all that. Turns out the hardest part of this was in 2 minutes, because I wanted to do, you know, I got to have cute names for things. So tech tip in 2.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But man, getting that done in 2 minutes, that was a little stressful. But I did. So I got it done in 2 minutes. But in that process, one of the things was I wanted to make sure my cursor showed as I was recording my screen. And I was having an issue with OBS recording the cursor.
Oh.
But I did find a little website, a little bookmark, where you can add your cursor to any website so it shows as you're recording. So if you record and you want to make sure your cursor shows up, it's just a quick little bookmark, which was handy for me. And quite frankly, sometimes I post things because I have found that future me really appreciates when past me writes some things down, because I have searched for things and I found out that I had the best answer for it. We're just like, oh yeah, I did that. This might be just for me, but I found it handy and useful. All right. Do all of your students get as much sleep as they should be getting, Sean?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
At least that's what I hear.
Yeah. So I'm going to share this. This is something you might want to share with the kids, why it is that sleeping is so important. And this is from Ars Technica. And this is about what happens when you sleep, what your brain does, that your brain is actually doing stuff while you're sleeping. So it has a built-in garbage disposal, and it flushes out some things that need to be flushed out. So you might want to share that with some of the kids as well. All right. Every once in a while, you have something to do, and you just want to kind of enjoy something in the background. And this is 20 minutes of Charles Schulz drawing peanut comics. Just something relaxing about that, and it's interesting as well. So you might want to take a look at it. You might want to share it with some of the kids as well, if they are interested with certain things here. But I'm just going to leave this as something kind of ASMR-ish about it. So, you can check that out. But one of the things you don't want to do is you don't want to be up all night worrying about that.
Yeah, at least not according to Access to Culture Translator. One of the articles this week was up all night. What it is the Gallup polling data has found that a huge spike in the percentage of Americans who say they get less sleep than they need. I'm raising my hand because I am one of those. Survey results also indicate an increase in Americans' daily stress. Why it's news you could use? Well, this data indicates that when you interact with anyone in a store, on the road, at work, or in the church, there's a decent chance that that particular human is feeling both exhausted and stressed out. The odds of the stress/exhaustion matrix are even higher if you're conversing with a young woman between ages of 18 and 29. In 2001, 42% of young women in that bracket said that they get enough sleep, but that number has dropped 27%. Younger women are also most likely to say that they experience daily stress. Stress and sleep have a symbiotic relationship, and parents should understand how both factors play into a role as teens or in teens' mental health. We've been hearing studies about teens and sleep for years, and I think this reinforces that need to help our parents take away the electronics at night and give them a chance to get some sleep. So when they come to school or go throughout their day, even in the summertime, they're getting the best they can out of their kid. Their kid's getting the best out of themselves. Paying the Piper. Here's what it is. Research and investment firm Piper Sandler released their 47th semi-annual Taking Stock with Teens survey, focused on modern teen trends. Why it's worth paying attention to? Well, while the survey is primarily focused on trends for investment, their research does give us insight into the ever-changing winds of teen culture. The survey covers everything from social media usage to which clothing brands teens prefer to their favorite snacks. By the way, it's Goldfish.
Good choice.
I never would guess that one. Good choice. But I need to stock the school store with that is what it turns out. Yeah, just ironically, years ago, I couldn't sell those things to save my life. Some of the more interesting trends include TikTok losing popularity with teens and Instagram regaining it. 85% of teens owning an iPhone and the environment being a social cause most teens care about, even though only 14% cared about it. We'll see how this trend plays out over the rest of the year and into the future. But for now, when your teen tells you that they have a $1,600 iPhone Pro Max, you'll know at least partly why. These guys have some wonderful stuff. This is only two articles. They've got about three every week, and you get a newsletter in your mailbox. And they've got other resources as well. Like if you're interested in what the teen lingo is, they actually started a teen lingo dictionary. So you can get the up to date on what the kids are saying. There's a new word the kids were trying to get me to say. And as soon as they were trying to get me to say it, I realized that's a word I should probably never use.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So check them out. It's Access to Culture Translator. You can look them up online, and they will send you a free newsletter every week if you desire it. So,
all right. And you should desire reading all of the notes and following some of the links over at middleschoolmatters.com. We also would appreciate it if you'd go to the podcast catcher of your choice and give us a 5-star rating. Tell us why Sean is the world's greatest co-show host. And tell your friends, tell your neighbors, tell your enemies, tell everybody.
Yeah.
We would appreciate that as well. With that, this has been Middle School Matters for middle school educators who care.
All opinions expressed on this podcast are exclusively the opinions of the host and guests, and not indicative of any employer.